Utilities, Finance, and Policy Committee. It is Thursday, March 17th, 2022, a little over after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We have a bill before us. Excuse me, I need to put my camera on. We have a bill before us, Senate File 3051 by Senator Rarick, Energy Facilities and Public Utilities Provisions and Modifications. Welcome to the committee, your committee, Senator Rarick, please proceed as you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And we have been discussing, you know, for a number of years the evolution of the energy system and the grid in Minnesota. And Senate File 3051 is looking to make some reforms to the 40-year-old permitting framework to recognize some of those changes in the energy landscape today. The framework that we currently have was intended for the investor-owned utilities, and with this growing group of independent power producers, the process just does not work and was not ever meant for them. So what Senate File 3051 looks to do is reform and streamline the siting and permitting process to better reflect Minnesota's changing energy landscape, to maintain a robust public participation and regulatory oversight. Another important piece that we'll have folks speak to, but it's going to help acknowledge the importance and incentivize the use of local labor for these energy projects, as well as maximizing the local economic benefit that accompany the utility scale wind and solar projects. So with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers. I have with me Peter Mavis with the Clean Grid Alliance, Adam Sokolsky with EDF Renewables, and Kevin Pranis with LIUNA.
Okay, welcome to the committee, Ms. Mewis. Mr. Mewis, please
thank you,
state
Chair,
your name
and Senator members committee. Peter Mavis, Regional Policy Manager for Clean Grid Alliance, based here in St. Paul. We represent the large-scale utility wind and solar developers, as well as transmission line developers and storage and other supply chain folks. Thank you, Senator Rarick, for carrying this bill for us. We very much appreciate it. Looking forward to a good discussion today. Real briefly, Chair Sumb, gentlemen, members of the committee, I just want to give a little backstory here. When I first started in 2018, I was handed a bill that's very similar to this bill. And we also had a divided legislature at the time, and we faced some tough challenges with some of those provisions, and ultimately that bill never went anywhere, and a lot of it was to do with, you know, opposition from utilities. So for a couple years we took a break, and then about a year and a half ago we sort of regrouped, Mr. Sokolsky and I, as well as some of our members and some regulatory attorneys, and said, you know, Minnesota has a very good permitting process in the state, but we believe that there's opportunities for reforms to streamline things. And so we spent some time kind of working through the statutes and trying to figure out what are some modest changes we could make, you know, that provides the continuation of good, robust intervention, but helps streamline the process a little bit. And that is what's been culminated and included in this bill. Additionally, we spent a lot of time working with the Public Utilities Commission, with staff, as well as a few members, to look at efficiencies within the commission that we could do outside of the legislature, outside of the rulemaking process. And I think we also achieved some good efficiencies there. And I give a lot of credit to their executive director over there, Mr. Seifert, as well as Chair Sieben and their staff. One other brief point, what I think is different now as to what it was in 2018 is that the utilities have really made incredible strides. I'll pick on two. I'll start with Great River Energy. As we all know, they made a bold vision to close a coal plant in North Dakota. They ultimately sold that and committed to a large additions of renewable energy for their portfolio. Were very creative in using existing interconnection points to add those resources, and they're continuing to go through that process. I'll also point to Xcel Energy. As we all know, you guys had a presentation from them. They have a very large resource plan that just was approved by the commission, the most robust resource plan I think the state of Minnesota has ever seen. That was a very long and arduous 2.5-year process, and I think Xcel Energy would agree that that was a challenge, but we got through it. And we did it you know, as a coalition, and I think we're very proud of that product. So with that said, we have utilities now that are looking to add 4.5 gigawatts of renewable energy over the next planning period, 15 years. And what we're trying to do in this bill is recognize the importance of speeding up the permitting process to help facilitate the transition that these utilities are looking to make over this next 10, 15 years. And so with that, I'll pause and I'll pass it off to my colleague, Mr. Sokolsky, to kind of give you a little bit more background as to why we're going this road.
Excuse me, can I just interject? Senator Rarick, there is an A1 amendment here that
Mr. Chair, I forgot about that, and I would like to move the A1 author's amendment.
Okay, Senator Rarick has the A1 author's amendment, which you have in your packets. Take a quick look at that. Is there... all these are important. It doesn't look...
Chair Senator, I'm happy to briefly explain the amendment.
Sure, yes.
This is a provision that is taken directly from the Certificate of Need statute. This was at the request of the Public Utilities Commission staff that if we were going to be eliminating the Certificate of Need, that we bring these and embed them in the site permit statutes, and it just gives them broad authority to address environmental and socioeconomic considerations in the site permit process.
Okay, any questions of... Mr. Mavis on that? Any questions on the amendment, comments on the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Senator Rarick, it's on your bill. And Mr. Soliski, help me.
Sokolsky.
Sokolsky, please proceed to introduce yourself, and we look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Senjum and Senator Rarick. My name is Adam Sokolsky. I work for EDF Renewables. EDF Renewables is a renewable energy developer, owner, operator, covering the United States and Canada and Mexico. We've got over 30 years of experience developing projects across the U.S. And have developed about 16,000 megawatts in North America over the years. We continue to own and operate about 11,000 megawatts of renewable facilities. And in Minnesota have developed over 1,000 megawatts of primarily wind that's operating here in the state. We're currently developing and permitting a number of solar plants as well, a little more than 500 megawatts here across the state of Minnesota. Senate Bill 3051 really does a great job at addressing some of the issues we've got in Minnesota. We've got a 40-year-old regulatory framework for electric utility regulation. And independent power producers like my company and others in this space are really different from utilities. We don't have the same powers, we don't have captive rate bases and captive rate payers, and with that, we need to be treated slightly different than electric utilities. And so this bill tries to make some incremental steps towards that. Among other things, the bill reforms the statutory and regulatory framework to better accommodate renewable energy developments. It creates at the same time efficiencies around at the PUC by adjusting the proceedings to better fit independent power producers and project developments. At the same time, with the streamlining, we maintain the strong protections for ratepayers that are currently in current statute. Don't take any powers away from the PUC to review rates, competitiveness, et cetera. And when you look at the regional, the region, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, these steps make us slightly more competitive in Minnesota than we would be otherwise. Minnesota's got a great state permitting process. It's different from our neighboring states. It's very rigorous and sometimes takes a lot more time than our neighboring states. So it's a good improvement there. I can go into further detail if you'd like. I think we want to just try to hit the high points today. I think in the end, as Peter mentioned, as you look at Xcel and Great River and a lot of the other utilities, we've got a lot of transmission and a lot of renewable projects that are going to be before the Utilities Commission in coming years. It's going to take a lot of time and effort at the Commission to review and do the stakeholder process and proceedings to get those projects permitted. We're trying to free up a little bit more of their time by focusing the Commission on the most important issues and not bogging them down in proceedings that look at issues that you know might not be best suited for independent power production. We urge your support for Senator Rarick's 3051, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Solinsky. any questions of the witness? I just have a general one because I'm kind of experiencing myself back home. When we say efficiencies and streamlining, that can get the, you know, some people can get a little worried about that if you're if it like personally affects you. And I think it's one of your projects, Mr. Smolinski, Byron Solar, 1,800 acres, and there are people that are a little worried about the fact that, and it's not your fault, just because of our statutes, it usurps, if it, by virtue of its size, any authority of local planning and zoning people to have any input into the project. And again, that's not your fault. But when we say this thing about streamlining and efficiency, it's kind of in the eyes of the beholder. Some people don't want that. Some people would like to have a little bit more input into the process, if you will. Any thoughts about how much we're sort of giving away to the process as we think about streamlining and creating more efficiencies? Just kind of a general question.
Senator Senjan, I'd be happy
Who are the losers? I guess maybe who are the losers as we do this?
I would say nobody is the loser on this bill. Our siting statutes, 216E, 216F, really look at, provide the State Utilities Commission with jurisdiction over projects over a certain size, right? The local townships and counties absolutely have input into those processes, and the commission listens to them. However, it's a jurisdictional question. The commission does have authority over those projects, and that's what the legislature decided way back when they enacted those initial statutes. In this case, one of the efficiency areas comes in along the transmission line routing process, for instance, for a wind project or a solar project that might have a short transmission line associated with it. The efficiency there is when a company like ours, an independent power producer, comes in asking for a permit for some transmission, we'll have voluntary agreements for that entire route, say it's 10 miles. The state statute requires us to bring in a second route where we probably don't have any site control or any leases for the commission to analyze and review. Well, bringing that second route in freaks the public out. You want to build a transmission line? We said no to that. No, we don't want that over here. No, we said no to your leases. There's a case where we actually create winners with this bill. We take that requirement to file an alternative route and subject that permanent route or alternative route to full environmental review off the table, focus on the route that's been applied for and that has site control leases along it, voluntary leases, to ensure that we got a great environmental review of a route that people have volunteered to say, you can put this on my land. So there's a case where it not only streamlines, but also prevents the public from being subjected to a proceeding, kind of a straw man proceeding, that just gets people riled up for unnecessarily. So I think I think you're right to ask the question. In this case, I don't see a lot of losers being created. I see more efficiency, a more straightforward process at the Utilities Commission, and a process that allows the commission to focus on the real projects that are being proposed.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Because you just made a follow-up. So on the current process, I mean, as a company, you have your certainly preferred route, and that's the one that you probably put forward first, but you're required to put a second route together, which probably you know that at least you're not interested in, and probably a lot of other people wouldn't be, but you're required to do that anyway, and that just creates some anxiety and commentary perhaps that was probably not necessary to the process, is there?
Senator Senjum, absolutely. It creates fear among the community. The community then reacts to something that isn't maybe so real. I think that's an unnecessary kind of, we don't want to rattle people in permitting processes, right? You want to be able to focus on what's really being proposed, not something that's, an additional straw alternative that just in there for statutory purposes.
Good. Members, any questions? that line, wherever it is, has to be, or it's acquired on a voluntary basis. Is that right?
Chair, yes, Senator, that's correct.
Yes. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate the testimony. And I've got Mr. Prentice.
Thank you, Senator.
With us. Welcome, Mr. Prentice. Please state your name and
thank
proceed
you
with your testimony as you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Senjum, committee members, Senator Rarick, Kevin Prentice on behalf of Liuna, Minnesota, and North Dakota. We represent 13,000 skilled construction laborers and 15,000 of their family members across the two states, and we're here to testify in support of Senate Bill 3051. Our energy system, as I'm sure you all know, provides more than just affordable and reliable electricity. It also provides jobs and economic opportunity to thousands of Minnesotans, including many Liuna members, who work hard every day to keep our electric and gas utilities working properly. We recognize the state's undergoing a transition in how the system operates and the type of energy we use, and we want to make sure that high-quality local jobs and economic opportunity that energy can provide aren't lost in the shuffle. This bill would require utilities to report on and require the Public Utilities Commission to consider the local job and economic impacts of energy resource decisions. It's a simple proposition. When we make decisions on energy, we're going to consider people's livelihoods, just as we're going to consider climate impacts or other environmental attributes of any particular decision. The other thing I would say, and that's the purpose of the local reporting and the local job consideration language, the only other thing I would say about the bill generally is we're strongly supportive of the streamlining. I can tell you that our members show up regularly to these hearings and these processes, and the truth is the current process is duplicative. Most of our members can't tell the difference between a certificate of need and a site permit or understand why different hearings or different questions would be answered for each. They find it more confusing than helpful. This proposed amendment would simplify that while providing all the same level of public input. We have the same concern to make sure that our members' voices can be heard, and we believe this process would provide that better and provide more confidence in the process than currently, you know, which our members find to be quite confusing. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Prentice. Any questions of the witness? No questions? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We proceed. We have Ms. Deb Bergen, Missouri River Energy. Is she here online?
Yes.
Ms. Bergen?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. I can't see you, but maybe I can put myself on gallery here.
Ah, there we go.
Okay, there you are.
Okay.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, thank you, Senator Senjum. Deborah Bergen, I'm with Missouri River Energy Services out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Missouri River Energy Services, also known as MRES, is a municipal power agency. We provide wholesale power and other services to 61 municipal electric utilities in four states, Iowa, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. And 25 of our member communities are located in western Minnesota. I just want to address two sections of SF3051 today. The first is Section 5, which Mr. Prentice was largely just discussing. It adds a requirement to the integrated resource process requiring utilities to report on local job impacts for projected resources. You know, the fact is that most IRPs, particularly for us, only generally model and identify generally the future resource needs for a utility. It often doesn't recognize in 10 years you will need 2 megawatts of solar at this exact location. It's much more general than that. It's only later after the IRP process that the actual location results from a different process of analyzing transmission pathways, transmission costs, cost of the resource, and sometimes, quite frankly, MRES is rather small in size. We'll get approached by a developer who will bring a project to us down the line. So we really don't have that information of local job impacts when we file our IRP because it is just too general. Having said that, I met with Mr. Prentice yesterday and we discussed this. We're going to continue to discuss if there aren't ways to meet what his goals and needs are, and also to address the concerns at MRES. We don't have language for you today. I'm sorry. I apologize that. for that, but Mr. Planas and I are committed to continue to work on this together. And I just want to say for MRES, we understand the need to address local job impacts. When we built the Pella project, the Red Rock Hydroelectric project near Pella, Iowa, we made it a priority with our lead contractor to use local jobs, local resources. All of the pickup trucks used for that project were bought from the local dealerships in and around Pella, Iowa. That's something we're proud of. So I'm telling the committee today that although we have concerns, we're committed to working with Mr. Pranis to address those and try to work on that section. The second area of concern we have with the bill is Section 7. It requires for each non-renewable resource that we may retire in the next 15 years to include a plan in the IRP process on the upgrades of the transmission. Now, first of all, that's already being done in the Regional Transmission Organization, or the MISO process. The Regional Transmission Organizations, MISO, Southwest Power Pool, others already have a process that requires respective tariffs for transmission planning and upgrades upon a unit's retirement. For example, in MISO, it's called the Attachment Y process. So that's already being done. Second of all, for MRS, for some of our resources, we're interconnected to transmission facilities that we do not own. We're largely transmission dependent. While we do own part of CapEx 2020, for a lot of our projects, generation projects, either we're taking it on contract, or even if we own it, we're not owning the interconnected transmission. So we just don't think this adds any benefit to the IRP. It would just, at most, we would just add a lot of speculative gobbledygook, if you will, that adds nothing to the IRP process. This is already being done with the regional transmission organizations. It does not need to be done with the IRP. And with that, I'm going to thank the committee and Senator Sengen for your time. I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bergen. Any questions of the witness? I do have... Is a little redundancy in terms of Section 7, is how profoundly bad is that? You're already doing it, I understand, but...
But this is asking for it long before we would do the Attachment Y process at the RTO level.
Okay.
It's asking every time we file an IRP, what are you retiring in the next 15 years, and what's your transmission upgrades going to be? Sometimes we're just not going to have that information, especially not that far down the line. As asked us to do something, we're going to do when we announce the retirement.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ms. Bergen, any questions to the witness? Mr. Mavis, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Do you want to respond to that?
Senator Sengen, yes. Members of this committee, real briefly, this we've talked a little bit about this provision. This was crafted by the House author, and so this was not part of our original package of provisions that we brought forth. This was, uh-huh. And so we need to have more conversations on the House side to figure out exactly what we're trying to achieve here, and I certainly understand Ms. Bergen's concerns, and so we'll continue to work on that. And we certainly don't want to be in a situation where we're just doing redundancies.
Sure. Okay, good. Anyone else to this witness? Then moving on to Mr. Evans, please come forward, identify yourself, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Rick Evans with XL Energy. The concern that we have with the bill primarily goes to Section 8 of the bill. And I think you may have heard us talk about this before, the idea of piecemeal deregulation, where we start taking apart the regulatory process a little bit at a time, and in this particular case, only for some of the players. So under this provision, the independent power producers would not have to pursue a certificate of need if the project they're pursuing is contained in a utility's IRP, Integrated Resource Plan, but utilities like Xcel Energy, would not be exempt from pursuing a certificate of need, even though the project is identified in our integrated resource plan. Increasingly, a certificate of need process is not a cheap or quick process. It's an expensive and time-consuming filing that we would have to make in order to get the certificate of need for a project that is already contained in our independent or integrated resource plan, something the IPPs would not have to do. Increasingly, we are asked in the regulatory process to compete with the IPPs on whether our project or their project is the one that should be chosen based in part on price and other considerations. Well, if we are asked to go through this lengthy and expensive process for our projects and they are exempt from that, you essentially have created an unlevel playing field. You put us in a position where we have to do something they don't have to do while we're competing with them for having our project selected. And so I think this is, again, sort of the kind of thing that we ought to be able to work out. We certainly want to have an expedited process. We certainly are not opposed to streamlining. We certainly want to make sure that things can move quickly through, but it should apply for everybody. It should be for all of the people, all the companies that are working to build these projects. And so I've spoken with Mr. Mavis about this. We can have some further conversations about it and see if there's some way to repair the problem. But our concern is that sort of by piecemeal deregulation, some people get the advantage of the deregulation and some people don't. And clearly they believe it's an advantage to not have to do this, and I think the committee should consider how that applies across the board. Okay. With that, I'll conclude and be happy to answer any questions.
Sure. Any questions of the witness, Senator Rutke?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have a question, it's just a comment. As I was looking at this early on, I've got a lot of concerns in multiple places, but that was definitely one of them, so thank you for bringing that up. We're creating winners and losers with something like this, and I don't think we normally do that. So, but that's for further discussion, but thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Senator Matthews.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a similar comment. I've read over this bill, had meetings on what this piece means and what it entails with the certificate of need, and I don't know that I can spell it out or articulate it clearly at the moment, but I still don't have full comfort with that provision. I know that we have passed exemptions to certificates of needs on some things in the past. Those are usually in very limited and very specific cases. I'm not sold yet as to whether or not this would meet the standard and satisfy my concerns in it. So I want you and the committee to be aware of that as we move forward and consider this bill down the road.
Well, members, this will be laid aside, so we'll have some time to dwell on questions and concerns. Anybody else? No one else? Senator Eric, you want to wrap it up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I hear your concerns and I share some of them, and I hope you realize, I carry a number of bills trying to get them and the sides to come together on agreement. So I do believe the groups have been engaging with the utilities and some of the others. They've been listening, and I'm going to make sure they continue to have those discussions, and we will work towards something that can be agreed upon and before we try to move it forward. But I do commit that we will be continuing those conversations and working towards something that can work for everyone. So I thank the committee for the time and the consideration.
Thank you, Senator Eric. With that then, Senate File 3051 will be set aside for further discussion and possible inclusion. Thank you so much. With thank that, members, at about what time is it? 3:35. We stand adjourned.